We're glad you're back with us today at GoldSeek.com Radio. My special guest in this Nugget segment, Mike Maloney. Well, Michael Maloney is the founder and owner of GoldSilver.com, a global leader in gold and silver sales. Author of the best-selling precious metals investment book of all time, it's a pleasure to welcome Michael Maloney.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you back. And let's begin, if we could, with fiat currencies. You say all paper money schemes eventually end in the same fashion, collapse and inflation. I wonder if you could please tell us why you expect the U.S. dollar perhaps to follow in the steps of its predecessors.
Well, there are some fiat currencies that were just basically abandoned. But when that happens also, it still goes to pretty much infinity price for everything. So they all go to zero. That's a fact. But not all of them end in hyperinflation. But we've tried this hundreds of times throughout history where we expand the currency supplies to stimulate growth. And what it does is distorts the economy, creates a wealth transfer, and ends up causing a lot of pain in the end. It always ends in disaster. There isn't a single example in all of history of this working out.
You know, not a single incident in history where this essentially ended well, particularly for the hoi polloi, you know, for the bourgeois, for the everyday folks. I mean, we essentially get caught holding the fiat currency bag.
Exactly. The distortion of the economy. See, when you create a new unit of currency, it doesn't actually contain any economic energy. It's neutral, basically sterile. Somebody spends it into circulation, and what it does is rob purchasing power from all the other sectors of the economy. So it pushes one sector into a bubble while it's causing prices to rise in other sectors, meaning people confuse rising prices with gains. It's actually a loss in purchasing power of the currency. So, when an asset class rises very fast, that's inflation. You get inflation of real estate. You know, one of the things, every dollar goes somewhere. And when they talk about the CPI index and things like that, when they talk about inflation, I like to use the Milton Friedman's definition of inflation. It's an expansion or a contraction of the currency supplies, inflation and deflation. Every dollar goes somewhere. So whenever they create excess currency, it inflates something. It's just that there's different waves and cycles, and currency takes the path of least resistance always, the place where it's going to get the most gains. It either inflates the stock markets, or it inflates savings accounts, or it inflates retail prices. But whenever they create currency, it does create inflation. And one of the things that people don't realize, we do not use money. We use currency. There is no country on the planet that uses money currently. My first episode of Hidden Secrets of Money is all about the difference between currency and money. And basically, currency has to be a medium of exchange, a unit of account. It's got to be portable, durable, divisible, something called fungible, where the units are all interchangeable. If I borrow a 20 from you, I can pay you back a 10, a 5, and 5 ones, and you're happy. So that interchangeability is fungibility. Money has to be all of those things plus a store of value. And so people need to stop calling the stuff in their wallet money. We don't have a money supply. We have a credit supply and a currency supply. And these definitions are extremely important.
Particularly appreciate the nuance of real money in circulation. You know, I think that we forget as Americans that for, let's say, 100 years, we actually still had the remnants of real money in circulation. Even up until, let's say, just a few years ago, one could find silver, dimes, quarters, halves.
Real money is the enemy of fiat currency. It can destroy a fiat currency and cause the fiat currency to go to zero. So politicians always have to pass some sort of law to if they want to get away with spending fiat currency and being able to make promises that they can't afford to keep without imposing the inflation tax on us, a stealth tax that the public doesn't see. If they want to promise all these free goodies that aren't really free, they have to pass some sort of laws to get rid of real money. You know, fiat currency, like I said, it distorts the economy. It causes bubbles. So for the savvy investor that sort of knows what's going on and the people that are good with playing with credit and so on, it's a benefit. They win at everybody else's expense. Like I said, the inflation tax, you know, I was interviewing Steve Forbes a few months ago. One of the things he brought up that I'd never even thought of before was who made the Federal Reserve the fourth branch of government? Who allowed them the power to impose a tax? They're targeting 2 or 3% inflation. That is their target. In other words, they're saying they're going to impose a 2 or 3% tax across the board for everybody in the United States. That's a power that the government is only supposed to have.
No, it sure is. And, you know, if we look back over its 100-year tenure beginning in 1913, most sources indicate that we have lost roughly 96% of the purchasing power of the greenback over that 100-year period. Here at its centennial birthday, if you will, facing a runaway balance sheet at the Federal Reserve, approaching $4 trillion, on track for $5 trillion as soon as this time next year.
I keep on harping on this in different interviews and stuff, but basically the public does not understand the scale of the emergency that is going on. You know, they did all these bailouts back in 2008, but then they never stopped increasing the currency supply and doing emergency measures. They're right now creating $85 billion per month. So that equals just over $1 trillion per year. Well, in 2008, base money, I call it base currency because it's not money. So the base currency supply was 0.8 trillion. It was less than a trillion. Now they create $1 trillion every year. In other words, it took 200 years, over 200 years, to produce that first 0.8 trillion of the paper dollars that are in your wallet. They produce more than that every single year, and it's just going, this is QE to infinity. When Ben Bernanke came out and said that they weren't going to taper, that was the point where it was all over with. That was an admission that they can never taper. If they can't start to taper off of this life support without crashing the stock market and the economy in 4 years into an economic expansion, then it's just not possible. And every 4 to 5 years, there's a recession. So we're due for a recession in 2014, 2015 at the latest. And what's going to happen then? Janet Yellen will start producing half a trillion a month, a trillion a month, who knows? Basically, the dollar is toast eventually. One of the things that I show in the second episode of Hidden Secrets of Money is that every 30 to 40 years, the world has an entirely different monetary system. It didn't affect the common person on the last transitions. It will during this transition. But before World War I, we had full gold backing. Between the wars, we had partial gold backing and partial debt backing of currencies. Then from 44 to 71, we had the Bretton Woods system where other countries held U.S. dollars in reserve, and then the U.S. dollar was convertible into gold, and foreign central banks only could change their dollars into gold at the New York Fed. And then Nixon closed the gold window in 71, and in doing so, he unwittingly began an experiment that has been proven just hundreds and hundreds of times throughout history to not work. It's always a 100% failure rate. Nixon put the entire world on fiat currencies simultaneously because they were all pegged to gold, but through the U.S. dollar. So when he severed that tie with the U.S. dollar and gold, he severed the tie between all world currencies and gold. And so we began this experiment that, like I said, has throughout history, there is no example of it ever working. It's a 100% failure rate.
Now we become accustomed to this QE to infinity, and what we haven't even addressed, the Fed funds rate and overnight lending rate, virtually at zero.
Right. What it means is that they're out of ammunition. What they're doing isn't working. And so when we start to go into a recession, and we really are in one, we never got out of the last one, but when things start getting worse, they're going to triple what doesn't work. And then they're going to quadruple what doesn't work. They're just going to keep on saying, well, we need to, since it didn't work, we need to do more of it. And basically, this is the beginning. 2008 was the beginning of the transition to the next monetary system. If you look around the world, my series, Hidden Secrets of Money, and you can see it at hiddensecretsofmoney.com, it shows all of the nails in the coffin for the U.S. dollar standard. Since 71, the world, you know, it was a whole bunch of fortunate accidents for the United States that put us on this global dollar standard where we're the world's reserve currency. We didn't have any wars on our soil, and during World War I and World War II, countries paid us in gold. And by the end of World War II, the U.S. had two-thirds of all the world's gold and three-quarters of all the world's monetary gold, the central bank gold. And so it made us, it's all financial. We became a superpower because of what went on financially behind the scenes of all this war. It wasn't really the war itself that made us the superpower. It was the fact that we had these lucky accidents happen to us that gave us the right to impose a tax on the rest of the world since 1944. If the rest of the world has to hold dollars, and more than half the dollars that exist outside the United States, and we create a new dollar and dilute the currency supply and do some deficit spending with that, it gets its purchasing power by robbing it from all the other dollars in existence, including the ones that reside outside the United States. That's a stealth tax that the rest of the world couldn't see, but they're all waking up to it. If you watch Dollar Crisis to Golden Opportunity, the third episode, you'll see all of these nails in the coffin. And when Nixon put us on the dollar standard in 71, there was a calm before the storm where everything worked just fine until Saddam Hussein started selling oil for euros. And then the nails in the coffin are coming more and more and more quickly. And now there's something happening at least once a month or once a week where another country is turning its back on the U.S. dollar and not wanting to use the U.S. dollar in international trade. And that means that someday all those dollars outside the United States, if they don't have a use for them, they're going to start coming home. We already had a picture of what this looks like when that happens. I don't know if you remember the late 80s when Japan was coming over here and buying up downtown Los Angeles and Rockefeller Center and all of the class, huge inflation, where all of the big skyscraper buildings in, you know, the premium stuff doubled in price very, very quickly. That is basically going to be happening again, except this time it's going to be China coming over here and getting rid of their trillions of U.S. dollars that they've got in reserves.
Well, let's transition, if we could, into just what steps investors can take to convert their paper stocks, bonds, and overvalued assets into physical gold and silver investment vehicles. I understand that you prefer physical gold, as do we. Maybe give some tips to folks and whether or not you shun ETFs.
I absolutely do shun ETFs, but first, I believe that the first step for anybody is to get educated before you take action. Know what you're doing before you do it. And so they should listen to more of the episodes of your radio show, listen and watch everything else that they can find that's similar. My series, Hidden Secrets of Money, is a very in-depth series. It's shot in 16 countries. It has animations that we have two full-time animators that animate complex. Our most recent episode, The Greatest Scam in the History of Mankind, shows how the monetary system works and that it's just a giant Ponzi scheme. And it really is the very first time that people can actually see the whole thing and see how the monetary system itself, just having dollars in existence, steals wealth from the working class and transfers it to the financial sector. It went a million views in 3 weeks. So get educated first, and then the next step, I would say, is to buy physical coins and bars, either in your possession or in a storage account at a third-party depository. I don't like banks and safe deposit boxes. They were closed the week of 9/11, and if you had gold, you couldn't get to it. If you had gold at Brinks or some private, you know, Brinks is not a, they don't fall under any banking regulation. A lot of these depositories are basically independent companies. Brinks calls themselves UPS with guns. They're an armored car service. They've got a depository, and they will store for people. We open accounts for our customers at Brinks. That's a very liquid way of maintaining your own coins and bars. And then the third thing would be stocks. Stocks give you leverage, but you take your gambling money for the mining stocks and so on. When it comes to ETFs, with an ETF, you have a share in a trust that is a custodian for some gold, but you don't own the gold. You don't own the silver in that ETF. You're owning a share in a trust, and you are an unsecured creditor. And so you are the last in line if something happens to that company. If something does happen, good luck. And what you're also, with an ETF, you can short them. If somebody is short, that means that there are more owners for each ounce than there are ounces. I mean, it's that simple. When somebody borrows an ounce and sells it into the market, then somebody else buys it. So that person owes that ounce back to the original owner, and somebody else also thinks he owns that same ounce. An ETF, if you're going to get involved with them, before you do, read their prospectus and their Securities and Exchange 10-K filings very carefully before you do, and read it with a very suspicious eye as to how could these people cheat me. And when you do, you're going to discover some clauses in there that basically make it okay for them to not have all the gold or silver that they basically are going to claim they do. These clauses have little twists. They either give it whatever they're saying. If you read the sentence, it'll have a word or two inserted that either give it no meaning, or it gives it two meanings, or it gives it the exact opposite meaning of what it appears to be.
You know, it's ironic you'd mention that our mutual friend and friend of the show here, Robert Kiyosaki, one of the first things he asks when entering into any business deals, as he said many times here on the show, is how will they cheat me? And that's euphemistically said. He would said it more colorful manner. Also wanted to ask you about the gold on the London Exchange. You know, it's re-entered backwardation second time this year. That's only the fourth time in 20 years, and James Turk, a regular on the show, he believes that this has marked the lows in almost every, for instance, 1999 and 2008, backwardation marked the lows on the yellow metal. Are you following this indicator at all, and do you think it could suggest a nadir for the markets?
I really am only interested in the very long-term trends. I don't believe, I am not a gold bug. I'm not attached to gold and silver in any way. I just believe that gold and silver are in their cycle right now, and when they are doing an accounting of the expansion of the fiat currency supply, which they have done, it's already happened twice in the United States, 1934 and the 1970s. Gold rises to account for the expansion of the fiat currency supply. Well, it's happening again, and during these periods, things like the Dow gold ratio, where you take the points on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, divide it by the price of gold, and you get how many ounces of gold each share of the Dow costs. And what you see, if you do a long-term chart on this going back 100 years, is that there are times of a tremendous overvaluation for paper assets and undervaluation for gold and silver. Same thing when you take a look at it, real estate versus gold or silver. Regardless of what the price is, I don't really care what the price goes to. I care how much stuff gold and silver is going to buy. If we're in a deflation and the Dow goes down to 3,000 and gold peaks at 6,000, that means it's half an ounce of gold will buy one share of the Dow. If we go into big inflation and the Dow goes to 30,000 but gold goes to 60,000, it means that half an ounce of gold will buy one share of the Dow. And if we go into hyperinflation and the Dow goes to 30 trillion and gold goes to 60 trillion, it means that half an ounce of gold will buy one share of the Dow. So the price is absolutely inconsequential. I'm looking for how much stuff it purchases. And when you measure gold against both real estate and stocks, it has not completed its cycle yet. We are currently around the area of 12 or so. In other words, it takes 12 ounces of gold to buy one share of the Dow. In 1932, it only took two. In 1980, it only took one. Since we're coming off the biggest bubble of paper assets in all of history, and the lowest, you know, the year 2000, 2001, that was the biggest undervaluation for gold. It was the lowest value that gold had ever had in 5,000 years. You have to look at the fact that before 71, all currencies on the planet, or the vast majority of them, were somehow connected to gold. There may have been one or two that weren't, but those fail, as we know. At any given time back then, there might have been one or two where they go off of gold and then it eventually implodes. But typically, before 71, currencies were always connected to gold, or gold was our money. And then from 1971, so it's only the past 40 years or so, that the world has done this experiment where no nation on planet uses gold as money. So there's no monetary demand in the year 2000. And gold had gone into a bubble in 1980 and entered a brutal bear market from 1980 to 2000. By the mid-1990s, investors just started giving up on gold and silver and selling. And so by the year 2000, nobody wanted gold. And when I discovered gold and silver in 2002 and started buying and started telling everybody about it, they'd be going, gold is the worst investment you could buy. And I'm trying to get them to buy gold in the low 300s. I was buying at 315 and so on, saying gold has been going down for 20 years. And I'm going, exactly, it's been going down for 20 years. Don't you get it? And so it was almost impossible to get somebody to buy gold back then. But it's definitely not done with its cycle. We are just, this pullback that we've been in for the last couple of years is simply the equivalent of the 1975 pullback in gold, where it went from just under $200 an ounce to $100 an ounce in a 20-month period from the first day of 75 until September of 76. It did a big pullback then. So it's a cyclical bear market within a secular bull market. And, you know, people were asking me if, because I've been saying that this would happen during this bull market for years, they were asking me if the pullback in 2008 was it. And I said, no, there was too much demand. This a cyclical bear has to end with everybody giving up on that investment class. It has to be considered sort of a poison investment class. And you're seeing sentiment in gold right now that's very negative. Now, it could go down some more, but if it hasn't put in the bottoms already, it will very soon, and then it's off to the races. But it may have already put in the bottom. You know, in my book, I covered deflation, inflation, things going pretty much just as they are, hyperinflation, and then my favorite scenario that was a roller coaster, a mixture of all of the above. I said that there would be the threat of deflation, to which the Federal Reserve would overreact and do a big helicopter drop, which they did. That was the bailouts in 2008 and the QEs. That would cause a reflation, and we saw that with the stock markets and real estate. And then there would be a real deflation, a contraction of the currency supply. And if you take a look at what's going on with the credit aggregates right now, you can look at John Williams of ShadowStats has an M3 that he compiles. If you take a look at those measurements of the currency supply, but then realize that base money or base currency is a component. And so to see what's happening in the credit portion of those aggregates, you have to deduct base currency. And when you do, you find that there's this huge collapse in credit going on right now. So we are seeing a deflation happening in the credit aggregates, and Ben Bernanke has been almost exactly offsetting that collapse with the growth in base money, base currency.
Well, as this interview wraps up here, are there any other topics you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Urge them to take a look at Hidden Secrets of Money. I think they will really, really enjoy it. It's a very entertaining approach to economics and monetary history, and makes it sort of fun to learn these things. And basically, that there is something enormous waiting out there for us in the future. The greatest wealth transfer in the history of mankind. For most people, it's going to be a tragedy. But for the people that are smart and learn about this stuff and take action, it's going to be the best thing that ever happened to them. Because if it's the greatest wealth transfer in the history of mankind, that means it's the greatest opportunity in the history of mankind. So take this disaster and turn it around into the best thing that ever happened to you.
Well said. And any other contact information for the listeners today?
Goldsilver.com, where we've got news updated every day, and we offer bullion, coins and bullion, and hiddensecretsofmoney.com. Thank you.